Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day, call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in.
Here's a question for you, Bill. Find out what type of person you are. Two trailers came out today. Nobody 2. Do you know what that is?
I do not.
It's Bob Odenkirk being mild-mannered until not. It's the sequel to Nobody, where you didn't know what he was until he got on a bus and was threatened and beat the crap out of people. And then you find out his backstory, where he's a demon, as the kids would say. So Nobody 2 is coming out in a little bit. That trailer is out. And then you had the first trailer for the new Superman.
Ooh, I haven't watched it yet.
Well, that tells me what type of person you are. Not that you didn't watch it, but you got excited about Superman trailer. Because some people stupid comic book.
No.
Or other people want to see Better Call Saul or Slip and Jimmy be a violent dude who beats the crap out of people in the second Nobody. I didn't know it was good enough to get a second movie, but it did. I like Nobody, but Nobody 2 is going to come out, I think, in the summer. But yeah, we had both those trailers come out. And your reaction suggests you're in on Superman.
Yeah, I'm ready for Superman. They got to get it right.
They have to.
They gotta get it right. I mean, it's the two movies that come out in July, if they flop, with Superman and Fantastic Four, which I don't think either one will.
I agree. I don't think either one will.
But like, if they hit, they're like game changers again for their respective franchises.
Yes. Yes. They're both needed greatly. Now, we got a good run-up to it because Thunderbolts has done well. People like it, or New Avengers, as
it was really good.
Yeah, I liked it as well. So we got a little bit of a taste test for what Marvel's going to provide this year, and so far, so good for their first movie. We got to hit on the second one, though, because the Fantastic Four will be a big part of the future of Marvel, so they got to get this one right. I like the aesthetic of the trailer so far and the tone, so we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I do feel like, though, I don't want to spoil it for anyone that hasn't seen Thunderbolts yet, but I do feel like they kind of, in a way, ruin Fantastic Four in the post-credit scene.
Okay.
But I'm still very excited for it. But they ruined Thunderbolts in a way. I mean, they told us which cast members were going to be in the Avengers movie coming up next year before the movie was even released. So, like, you knew, like, well, none of these characters are going to die.
Except
for the one who did, who wasn't in the release.
Yeah.
They foreshadowed it very clearly.
Yeah. I'm just happy they put a good movie. And let me be clear. Sorry, the trailer for Superman is out tomorrow. It's a Wednesday.
Oh, tomorrow, okay.
Yeah, it's out tomorrow. I didn't make that mistake. Because James Gunn's tweeting up a storm about what's coming, and he just showed a little preview. So that'll be out tomorrow. So, yeah, there it is. And we'll talk more about that later in the week, because Michael Carroll joins us every Friday. We're going to be out and about, but we still hope to be joined by Michael to give his breakdown of what you should and shouldn't watch. And maybe he'll have his thoughts on the trailer. Michael Carroll does Comicast. He also has Comicast in regular radio form with us from 8 to 9 on Wednesdays, generally. And, of course, if you just want to listen to it as a podcast, you can find out wherever you listen to podcasts. So Michael Carroll does a good job when he joins us, and just a good job overall. Okay, we're still taking calls if you want to get in on anything. We got some news regarding the NFL. Of course, they won't let the NBA have the entire month of May. Schedule release day is tomorrow. The international games are out right now. Minnesota's going to play a couple of your games in Europe. They're going to have back-to-back games, so they're trying to limit the Vikings' schedule. So they'll play the Steelers in September on the 28th, and then October 5th, it'll be the Browns. The Dolphins are hosting. They're going to be in Madrid against the Commanders. The Commanders play the Dolphins in Madrid. The Chargers are going to have a game in Brazil. That one's yet to be announced as far as the opponent. The Broncos are heading over to face the Jets, and the Rams are playing the Jags. The Falcons are playing the Colts, all these in different European cities.
Front Office Sports has said it's the Chiefs playing the Chargers, uh-huh. and that'll be announced tomorrow in Brazil. I mean, if they were wrong, technically it could still be the Texans then. But I think it's the Chiefs are playing the Chargers.
Have you gotten your fill of, like, last year was exciting for people because the Texans were a hot team. They're going to be on prime time. Is that something, are you over that now? Like, I know people care. You wait all night. You get all the extra production because ESPN's on the game or Amazon's on the game. But for me, I don't really care if the games are in prime time. I know people do because it's I guess it talks about your status as a team. But if you tell me I get to watch the team play at noon every day, every Sunday, excuse me, I'm fine with that too.
Yeah, there I have a couple things on this. So, one, I like it from a going to the game perspective. My dad and I have season tickets.
Yeah.
So, like, it was fun going to the, you know, the Bears game, the Lions game on Sunday Night Football. Like, that was fun to go to. Because, like, it is, like, you have football during the day, and then you go. The fans are much better, it seems, in that environment. It does mean status, but it also means letdown. And, like, that's what I know in my life.
Okay.
Is, like, the Bears are scheduled to play the Eagles on Black Friday. Hate it. I hate it. Christmas last year sucked for the Texans. They got smoked by the Ravens on Christmas. So it's like, it can be fun when your team actually wins these games, but like, I'm not used to experiencing that. Like, I'm not used to seeing the teams that I root for or am heavily invested in, like, doing well in primetime games. I mean, the story of Sunday Night Football this year for the Texans, or was it the Monday Night game, was that Jared Goff threw, like, what, 5 interceptions, and the Texans still lost. Like, you're the laughing stock the next day. You're not.
I think you're right originally. I think it was a Sunday night game.
Was it Sunday night game?
Yeah, I believe so.
Like, you throw. Yeah, they played the Cowboys on Monday night. You know, he threw 5 picks in that game, and the Lions still won. Like, the Texans are being clowned the next day. So that's the drawback of the primetime games. I don't think we're going to see the Texans get more than 2 this year after the way they performed in those games. Because even the ones they won weren't pretty. Like, it wasn't pretty against the Bears. It wasn't. The Cowboys game was, but, like, they weren't great games. Like, I don't think after the way the season went and ended, like, we're going to see the Texans. They're not going to be a big primetime team this season.
I'm working under this theory that if you care a lot about primetime games, your team isn't very good because they're special to you. If your team is good, they're not a special thing to you because they happen all the time, and you're not all that worried. It's not that big of a deal because you're always in them. And like, generally, you probably win them quite a bit. There's nothing that special about it.
Like, Washington fans will be excited this year.
They're
probably going to get 3 or 4. They've already got an international game. They'll probably get a Monday, Thursday, and a Sunday night game this year. And then, like, those fans should be excited. Like, Washington's been a loser franchise, and now it feels like they're no longer going to be that anymore.
This is my point. They're being rewarded for what they did last year, but you get excited about it because you're not used to it because your team stinks. The teams who are the fan bases who are used to their team winning, they expect them. They're not that exciting. Hey, let's go out and win the game. I don't want to say the fans are taking a business-like approach to it. They're not taking the same approach that the teams do. But it's like, oh, the Chiefs are like, oh, we're on Monday night again or on Sunday night again. Yeah, expect it. Let's go win the game. Us, we turn it into an event, and then when they lose, it's like, oh. What a disappointment. And
I also think, like, I'm out on Christmas. I know they're going to do games this year again on Christmas, 3 more. I know the Chiefs game has already been announced for Christmas this year because they requested it. I hate it. I don't need it. I don't need a game. Unless Christmas falls on a Saturday or Sunday or a Monday, I don't need them doing what they did last year and putting games on a Wednesday on Christmas. Like, it's just not necessary.
Yeah, the Yeah, the Chiefs wanted to be a mainstay on Christmas. They wanted that to
They
want to
be like the Lions,
yeah,
basically.
They wanted
the Cowboys.
The Thanksgiving version, but for them on Christmas. I don't know if they agreed to making them the permanent fixture on Christmas, but we'll see going forward. Maybe they want to avoid the eventuality of the Chiefs not being good, although that feels like years away. The other thing you brought up during a break in the previous show is that the NFL is scheduling games directly against the college football playoff.
Yeah. I don't remember. It's the Eagles and the Commanders and the Bears and the Packers, which indicates those teams are all going to play on Christmas. The week before are going to be playing a doubleheader on a Saturday. It's the same day that there's three college football playoff games. I thought they were going to start working together. Like, that's what they talked about.
The NFL doesn't work with anyone. It feels like they will try to commandeer any day they can. And now they are on the necks of college football, and they'll probably win it.
Yeah, college football will change. When they expand the playoffs, I know you and Sean talked about it yesterday, but like when they expand the playoffs, I think college football is basically going to go to the NFL and be like, how can we make this schedule to where you guys don't dunk on us?
Yeah.
Like what can we do to not have two NFL games during the first round of a 16-team playoff? Like we don't want that. And, yeah, it's the NFL's right. I mean,
they can do what they choose. I think there's some rule in place that they can't have Fridays after a certain time. It's a long-standing rule, a federal rule. That's why the at a certain point in the year, that's why Black Friday games are early afternoon games.
Yeah,
because they can't play those games at night. I'm sure they would, but they can't go against. Strictly high school football or high school football and college football at a certain time of the day, at a certain time of the year. So that's why those games are earlier today. But the NFL will take every piece of real estate that they can, and I'm sure they will win out in these battles because it's still the king, and I don't think that king is getting killed anytime soon. All right, Eric, we'll get to you when we come back. You want to talk Astros? The Astros, we have mentioned today, at least on this show, they dropped the game to the Royals. Ryan Gusto didn't have a good outing. The team was down 7-0. They fought back to make it 7-5. Was not enough as they dropped the game to the Royals. Altuve was back, which was nice. He was at second. We talked about it this morning about how they should use their outfielders, and the consensus was DeCenzo should be playing more, and let's have Altuve at second. Not really Brendan Rodgers playing second with Altuve and left. So we'll talk about that and with Eric when we come back. But first, I want to talk about Aqueduct Plumbing Company. It's a place you go to whenever you have a problem with your plumbing. And while big issues can pop up, you can get ahead of them. Why not be preventative? Why not just have your plumbing checked out? They'll do that too, because you never want to come home, turn on the water, and not have it turned on. And even worse, you turn it on and it's dirty and smelly, and it's not something you can use, because you use water for everything. You use water to clean yourself. You use water to cook. You use water to wash dishes. You want that water to be pristine, and that's what Aqueduct Plumbing Company can provide for you. So whether it's a leak or something bigger that you can't take care of, like a fixture or water heater, or maybe you need a contractor, it's all there for you at Aqueduct Plumbing. You can call them at 281-488-6238, and then you can get yourself a free price quote. If you don't know what the problem is, you don't want to get charged for it, so they'll kind of work their way through and find the problem, and you'll get that quote, and you can decide on what you want to do. You can check out the reviews, because people have been reviewing the great work that Aqueduct Plumbing provides. You'll see that it's just not me saying it, it's the people getting the service. So check out the nice drop-down menu to see what they provide, and check out all the reviews that they have to let you know how great of a job they do. So remember, that number is 281-488-6238, and if you'd rather just go to the website, you can. It's aqueductplumbingcompany.com.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Del Olalea Show.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now back to Del Olalea.
Let's get to Eric here. He's got an Astros question, or just an Astros comment. What's up, Eric?
I have a question. The Astros not doing so well. Do you see them trading anybody and start to rebuild? I know it's kind of early, but still, I mean, I don't want to get rid of Yordan, but I'm sure there's papers out there. And also, how come the Boston Red Sox and the Dodgers under the Mets fade after the Astros win when the Astros cheated in 2017? Is it because of the co-host or the host after your show, the Boston Red Sox or the Boston fans? They just mass, you know? Also, have you seen that new HEB commercial with Dubon and Kenya and Altuve, where he's wearing the blue hoodie? It looks like he's wearing a wire underneath that.
I have not seen the commercial. Don't know exactly what you said about Paul and Boston Red Sox, so I can't really touch on that. As far as the trade is concerned, Jordan, they got him under contract. That's not happening. And also, the Astros have shown an unwillingness to make a move like that during the season. They finally did it with Tucker before the season. The one guy who you could get something for, if you're out of the race, would be Fromber, right? Does a contender want Fromber? And now he's less valuable because he's heading into free agency. So there was not hope, but a thought that trading Fromber along with Tucker going into this year, you might have been able to get yourself a haul. What you traded for Kyle Tucker gave you maybe not an everyday starter, but certainly as far as right field, but a guy who plays right field quite a bit, got you an everyday starter at third. And, well, Wisniewski dealing with an injury. I'm sure you could have got something similar for Fromber. But the Astros have not shown a willingness to trade away guys. And for what reason? They've always been a contender. This is the first year, possibly. And right now, they're not out of the race. But at 500, which is better than they were last year, I understand you entertaining that thought. But there's nothing in their history that would suggest they would make a move like that because they've never had the reason to.
I mean, they're two games back right now. Of the division, they are a half game back of the wild card.
Yeah.
So I think you'd have to see a pretty steep drop off here for them to unload Fromber.
Yeah.
You're not making the playoffs without Fromber Valdez. You're not. Yep.
You're nowhere near that decision right now. They are 20-20, and Joe gave you where they are in the standings. So there's no reason to make that call. Maybe you had the foresight, because this is what happens with fans. You can believe that they aren't really a contender. You may be right about it, but getting a team to get to that point is very difficult. It's not something they want to acknowledge. To get out ahead of something, to decide, you know what, yeah, we're still in the race. We can possibly make the playoffs, but are we really winning anything with this team? Teams value making the playoffs in all leagues, and it's easier to talk about it with the NBA and baseball, because the trade deadline is such a massive thing in both sports. The NFL has one. Sometimes big moves happen. It's just not that big in the NFL. And there are not very many consequential moves you can make in the NFL at the trade deadline that'll shift the trajectory of your team. So we stick with baseball and basketball. It's hard to get a team to decide, nah, we're not good enough, let's move on, when they're still in the race. Getting in the playoffs is still valuable to teams.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you're going to bet on it, like the bet would be that they're going to acquire a left fielder, a second baseman.
That's more likely.
Or a starting pitcher. That's way more likely than them selling. I can't envision a world in which the Astros are not at least only a handful of games back at the deadline and trying to make a move to make the playoffs. Because, like, what is Jim Crane going to say to Jose Altuve? And I was like, who are you going to trade besides Fromber? Like, and I think, like, the reason why I was pro-trade Fromber in the offseason was, if you're going to do something like trade Kyle Tucker, you might as well go all the way in and add to your farm system a Cam Smith-level prospect of a pitcher by trading Fromber. But they didn't do that. They only traded Tucker because they know they needed Fromber. They felt like they could replace Tucker and Bregman with Paredes and Walker, Cam Smith. Like, they thought that was going to be enough to get them by. And I mean, they're 500, but, like, when Christian Walker's not hitting fourth, he's a really good player. He's terrible hitting fourth for whatever reason. But, like, they're not gonna blow this thing up. Things have to go very poorly.
And right now, they're not going poorly enough. They're in a division that allows them some grace while they're trying to get better. 20-20, they're not out of it. They're very much in it. So, I understand trying to figure out a way to reboot this thing if you think it's not going to go well, but that's not what they're going to do. As Joe said, they're far more likely to add a piece with what prospects? I don't know. But they're far more likely to add a piece than they would to gain prospects as they go forward. So I love a team that tries to compete, and the Astros will continue to do that. They don't give up on seasons. And whether you want to call it arrogance or not, they're going to look at last year and go, why would we? We were much worse last year, and we're the Astros, and we found a way to scratch and claw and win the division one more time. So they're going to be justified in their belief that they can figure this out. New players in some spots, unfamiliar ones who haven't been part of the grind with this team over the last, well, almost a decade now. Well, if you go back to when they first made the playoffs, we're at a decade, 2015. So not a lot of guys remain from that, but the franchise has a pretty clear way of going and doing their business, and they will continue to stay in it. Joe, we talked plenty of Astros. Where can they find more of your Astros talk?
Yeah, Inside the Icebox, podcast Jeremy Bram and I do, sponsored by Blue Star Tequila. Drops every Thursday morning on YouTube and then airs as a radio show from 6 to 7 on Thursday as soon as the Killer Bees get off the air.
So do you have a big topic of conversation for this week's show?
I've been getting No, I'm tired. The last 2 days, Dell, have been tough.
The morning show grind has gotten to you a little bit?
I mean, I think if I was doing it every day, I think I might feel a little bit different. But
you
like,
would.
I didn't want to take naps during the day because then I was worried I wouldn't sleep at night.
Yeah.
And then I'm not sleeping well.
Because you have to get up.
I'm waking up
and you got a family.
I'm waking up in these cold sweats at 3:30 in the morning.
Afraid you're oversleeping?
Yeah, thinking, because I used to do that all the time.
Oversleep?
Yeah.
How often did you miss you were late because of shit for oversleeping?
So when we used to have the network.
Yeah.
We used to have a producer 24/7.
That's true.
And the morning show was operated out of D.C., in which all the producer did was pot up commercials. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have any like real responsibility, just straight up board hopping job. So I would oversleep like once or twice a week. And right. I would just bring the overnight producer like a case of beer like once a month as like a thank you.
As an apology.
Yeah.
Understood.
But like mornings are never for me.
I've grown to figure it out. I have embraced the nap because I'm worth nothing if I don't take it at this point. So I just take them, understand that maybe my regular sleep is going to be a little shorter, but hey, it's either that or
suffer.
Yeah, suffer, and I'd rather just sleep.
And you don't drink coffee, right?
No, it's not my bag.
Yeah.
I'll do an energy drink. In fact, there's one in the freezer right now that I got to go grab, mostly because I don't want it to explode.
No.
So I got to get that. Even if I don't drink it today, I'll just take it home with me. But yeah, I'm an energy drink person, and that's mostly just to stay awake on the drive home.
Yes.
That's what that's about, because I got, you know, the drive. It's longer than I would like when I'm near sleep, so I just drink one of those, stay awake, and get home safely, which is always the goal. Okay, we'll go to break with that. If you want to call in, you can. Maybe you oversleep when you should be at work. No judgments here. We've both done it. 713-780-3776 is the number. A couple more segments to go before we're out of here for the day. Joe can leave. He's been here since very early. We'll get to that when we come back.
You're listening to The Dale Show on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Dale. Dell, no, that's okay. That's on me. I went more country with it. My bad, Dell.
That's usually only reserved if I'm going to be late and you need to just give me more time.
There's a couple long ones in here.
Yeah.
I thought that was not that one.
Yeah, there's another one that's less offensive to me. But, you know, we just talk Astros, and let's talk some more. Lauren wants to talk some Astros. What's up, Lauren?
Hey, Dale. This is Lauren. The Astros were worse last year at this time, but we had Tucker and Bregman as well. This year we don't. Dallas Cowboys for life.
That's an Eric Wong joint.
Stop it.
It is. It's, he just, for some reason, he always has, he's done this before, not necessarily with this show, but the morning show where they're, where he will call in, and then he'll have one of his lady friends call in.
Oh.
That's why that call had that tone. Like, why would it end with Dallas Cowboys for life? That's what that was. Thanks, Eric. You're right, Lauren. They did have different players. I think I acknowledge that it's a different group. And with Tucker and Bregman a more talented group than Paredes and Smith at those two positions. But Christian Walker's, we assume, he is. He's better than the Abreu and Singleton combo. So that's an added plus there, although he had not hit, he wasn't hitting very well early. But your point is made. The two guys you mentioned had been through it. We trusted those guys to figure it out. And Tucker, before he got hurt, was great. And of course, he has had a couple of rough playoff stints. Last year was very short because they only had the two games. But still the Astros, and mostly this is more about the division they're playing in. The division they're playing in, no one, I believe, is running away from them. So that's why I still have some hope that that no matter how mid they are this year, they'll still be in the race. And we're nowhere near making a decision about selling guys, with Frommer being the main one that someone might want. So they do have some concerns. Like, the pitching staff is one where it's Frommer, Hunter Brown, and you're just kind of hoping on a night-to-night basis you get a good performance. Hopefully Renel Blanco continues his recent run. And can you find one more guy? Can you find a fourth? Right now that's in question, with Arrigetti still being hurt and Wesneski now being hurt, and, of course, the curious case of Lance McCullers and what he can actually provide for him. Well, John and I talked about it. I don't think you got in it very much, Joe. What, after so much time off, can we really expect from Lance? Will it take a month? Will it take six starts before he gets back into a spot where we can go, okay, we got something here, or does it ever come back?
I mean, unfortunately, like, I feel like I'd have to bet on it never, like, fully coming back. Like, we saw in his first start, I thought, a lot of good stuff from Lance, but the stuff that would get him in trouble in the past was right there with it. I mean, like, some of his breaking balls were fantastic in that game. But Lance has always been a pitcher that, like, getting five innings out of him felt like a good day, because he'd be in these high situation counts, he'd walk guys, get out of the damage, but, like, he'd have a high pitch count, be leaving games early. The problem is that if he's not striking guys out and he's getting through 88 pitches in four innings, like, it's not sustainable for your bullpen, A, and then B, like, it's not good enough. Like, can it get you through the regular season? I guess. I feel like we can't, I don't want to cop out here totally, but, like, I feel like we can't really judge Lance until, like, next season.
I would agree.
Because, like, I want to see him get through this season without getting hurt. B, he hasn't pitched in 2 years or 3 years, whatever it's been. Like, it's – whatever he gives you is just a bonus, but if he's a disaster – I mean, that's the hardest part. Like, if he's not good, I don't know what you do with him. Like, you DFA him, like Montero, and send him back to the minors? Like, I don't know what you do with Lance if he's not good.
What? I won't consider the last couple of years patience. There's nothing else they could do. He was under contract. There's nothing they could do with him. Now, and he wasn't affecting the team negatively on the field. You can talk about his salary, keeping them from spending if you want to do all that. But as far as what he might be while he's healthy and pitching, and how long do you give him to figure it out? Like you said, next year. But if he – look, last start was a disaster. Of course, if that keeps happening, he's not going to roll out there. But if he's a guy who consistently 4 2/3, 85 pitches, maybe he's not awful, but he's given up a couple runs, struggling through starts, are they going to give him enough starts to get to a point where you're like, okay, I know what I need to know about Lance? If this is a team who stays in the race, can they afford to let Lance figure it out?
I think it just depends on what happens with the other guys. I mean, if Wesneski is not out for the season, which I know they haven't indicated that yet, but, like, I don't know, it's an elbow, it's the Astros.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Arrigetti coming back. Like, if both those guys were to come back and be effective, and Wesneski was coming out of the bullpen for the Cubs, so you could piggyback and then go with the six-man rotation still, and that kind of solves your Lance problem in a way. But if, like, Wesneski were to come back and be good, and Arrigetti were to come back and be good, well, then it's like, what do you do with Lance? But if both of them are bad, then I think you give Lance McCullers the benefit of the doubt because of what he's done for this franchise and what he's done in his career versus Wesneski, who has accomplished nothing besides being a local kid. So, like, it just depends on what those guys do for, like, how long the leash is for Lance McCullers.
Yeah, and Fromber will go tonight, and they've called up Colton Gordon is the name. They called up Colton Gordon. Golden is your former DC at Notre Dame. Didn't he take the Bengals?
Yeah, he's the Bengals DC now.
Yeah, Colton Gordon is the name. So he will go as one of the injury replacements for the guys that Joe kind of ran down who aren't available. So, yeah, I think Lance is a beneficiary in some ways of circumstance, not his own. We know what he's gone through. But the Astros need him to maybe at a minimum just provide innings. Just be a guy who goes out there and so they can pencil in ironically, they're penciling, they would love to pencil in Lance every 5 days. Ironically.
I mean,
They need guys who can just be there for their turn.
Yeah, because like I don't think you need Lance to be like a playoff hero, but like he just has to bridge the gap to get to the playoffs, so that way, you know, hopefully Arrigetti, Blanco can be the third guy behind Hunter Brown and Fromber.
Yeah,
like it wouldn't. If I like had to guess right now, is the Astros make the playoffs and Lance McCullers is not on the playoff roster?
That would not surprise me at all.
Like that's kind of like that's where I would guess this is going. Is he helps you get through the regular season, but when it comes time, he's not really part of the solution to trying to win another World Series. Like, I don't foresee him being that guy, which is unfortunate with how much money he makes. And I still feel like they're going to try to add another, like, a Kikuchi-like deal.
I was going
to
ask you, said he's not the answer. Do they have enough? Javier, coming back after the All-Star break? That's alleged.
I'll believe it when I see it.
Exactly. Well, you laid it out. It's the Astros, so you never know with that sort of thing. So, as it stands, do we think Grinnell or Spencer Arrigetti are good enough to be a third on a potential playoff run? Because that would mean you're talking adding Kikuchi, a Kikuchi type.
Maybe.
Add.
Maybe they are. I think one of those guys could be the third guy in a playoff rotation. But I still think the best bet to me would be finding a Kikuchi level player that you can acquire at the deadline. Like that to me feels like almost inevitable. At this point, is that they add a starting pitcher.
If they are still a middling team but still in the race as we get closer and closer, will this be a franchise who, for the first time, really ever, not ever, but in the last 10 years or so, looks at their roster and go, you know what, we're not good enough.
We're just kind of stand pat.
Look, if things go great, cool, but we're not taking anyone else out of this farm system to help acquire someone to help this version of the team.
I think at worst they'll probably try to acquire someone that you like feel very comfortable trading a prospect for. Like, is that an okay start to the year? Like maybe going back to the Angels and asking for like Kyle Hendricks, like someone that like you're not giving up anything for, not even someone of Lo Profito or Wagner or the other kid they traded. I can't remember his name, but like Jake Bloss, like not even like those caliber of prospects. Like I could see that. But like I don't think they're gonna be in a position to where we're gonna get the deadline and they're trading Bryce Matthews.
Yeah.
Like I don't think they're gonna be in that business. You don't have the prospects to compete with other teams. A is the main problem. But B, like, is it worth it at this point to trade a high caliber prospect that you have in your organization for a pitcher to get bounced in the first round? The answer is probably no. Like, so I think you're adding someone who's better than Blanco and Arrigetti, but someone that's also probably walking in free agency just like Kikuchi did.
So if it costs you this year's version of Will Wagner or Lo Profito, you're not bothered by it too much.
No, it's fine.
Yeah.
Like, those guys are a dime a dozen. Mm-hmm. I mean, Lo Profito's in the minors, I think. So is Bloss. I don't know none of them are making an impact on the Blue Jays. And they could eventually, I guess, but Lo Profito was one of the most overhyped thing Astros fans have done. Like he's to me, like he is, like he's almost Astros Ty Washington at this point.
Oh man.
Like where like Rockets fans were having like mental breakdowns because of these first round picks that have been total nobodies in the NBA. And like that, like Lo Profito had some great catches and he hit a lot of home runs in Sugarland, but like, you're not going to miss that guy.
And I haven't so far.
No. Like, he doesn't solve your left field problem right now.
No, he's not better than Cam Smith. Or, excuse me, whatever. DeCenzo, yeah. Cam Smith, that combo of playing in the outfield at the corner outfield spot, Slow Profito is not better than either one of those guys. Do you remember the conversations about Polanco? And that would be Jorge Polanco.
Yes.
Look, I was one who scoffed at the thought of bringing that guy in because that was right around the time we were hearing about, well, Jose Altuve could play left field and Polanco might be the guy who pushes him there. And it felt disgraceful, insulting to Altuve. Now, the Polanco in Seattle, can I guarantee that guy would be what he is in with us in Houston? He's really good. He has bounced back from what was not a very good year last year to get off to a great start. So I got to give the guys I was taking shots at in the front office credit for that one, at least so far. Polanco's been really good, and he would be a nice piece here.
That would have been a good move for the Astros.
Yes, the way he's now, hitting the baseball.
Now, the other guy I remember that was being talked about was, what was his name? The guy from the Braves that got suspended for steroids already.
I have to look that up.
I can't remember his name. But, like, that was the other guy people were talking about the Astros adding this offseason. And then clearly, like, they just didn't feel like they needed to.
Profar?
Yeah, Profar, yeah. He was another one that was coming up. But Polanco was the main guy, I think, that people wanted. He's killing it this year.
And
I
mean, he wouldn't have cost very much. It wouldn't have been cost prohibitive to bring him in. That was one. They were after him, but he chose otherwise.
Seattle. Yeah, I think he chose Seattle.
So did they offer him a little bit more money? Do we know how that broke down?
No, okay. I don't remember that part, but like, I think he just chose Seattle. Okay. That the two teams were going after.
He decided to go back to Seattle, where he had struggled. He's apparently very comfortable there now.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing with this offseason that we learned was that maybe with Polanco is, I wonder if it was similar to Arenado, that trading Tucker and not signing Bregman kind of scared people off.
Of wanting to play here?
Yeah, just because it's like, well, what are they going to do? It's these conversations that we're having right now. Players are having with their agents of like, am I going to go to Houston and like, am I going to be a trade candidate at the deadline? Because yeah. That's the conversation they would have about any other team.
Yeah.
And so it's like, if they don't think that they are in a position to win, then they might not want to go there. And for Polanco to choose the Mariners, like, might say a lot about what people think about the Astros. I don't necessarily agree, but like, it puts you in an awkward spot.
They definitely felt coming into the year, they're a team in transition. So I imagine players around the league who know what this franchise has been about for the last decade looked at it and go, I don't know what's going on there. Are we all in on winning? And maybe Polanco felt that way, that, hey, if things were going poorly, they might have sent me someplace that I didn't have a choice in, and I'd rather avoid that. And right now, he's helping Seattle lead the division.
And Fromber's going to leave in the offseason, and it's like people are going to be skeptical at some point of, like, guys – you know, wanting to sign here if they're going to keep trading guys away as the Astros, like, retool a little bit. And it doesn't mean it's going to be like this forever, but the Arenado one's the one that, like, where, like, he turned down the Astros twice.
Yeah. They came after him a couple times.
They're red hot right now, the Cardinals. They've won 9 games in a row.
Yeah, and the Mariners lost 4 in a row, still lead the division, but either way.
But, like, you could still see, like, one of those moves happen this offseason. I mean, sure. This regular season.
Sure. Sure, definitely. All right, we're 40 games into the Astros season. Felt right to give a little perspective on what's going on and what might be coming up, and that kind of brought on by Eric. So you can see, you can change the conversation anytime you want by calling in. We got one more segment to go here. If you do want to get in, you can, 713-780-3776. And let me give credit to Lauren, too. It was Eric and Lauren, the combo. And Art, you asked a question because Art is aware of Eric's propensity to have women call in. I don't believe Eric's a pimp, Art, but I don't know that. I've never asked that question. I don't think he is, but who's to know? Okay, we got one more segment to go here. We will be back.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
Final segment before we wrap it up. Paul Gallant's up next. So, the Rockets do not win the lottery, don't get in the top four. They actually lose a draft slot from what would have happened if it just went chalk. It was the Suns' pick, so it was actually just a shot in the dark to see what would happen. And you know what? You have a great year, and you wind up with a top 10 pick. How you use that is something we'll figure out over the next, or at least they'll figure out over the next month or so. I am on the side of trading that pick, even if it's not for a star. I think back to, it's a long time ago, when Jeff Van Gundy traded the pick that would have been Rudy Gay. Now, of course, they may have very well just been drafting Rudy Gay for, what, Memphis at the time? But they traded Rudy Gay for Shane Battier. That pick for Shane Battier, at least. Jeff Van Gundy sided with a veteran over a young player because the Rockets were in a spot where a young player, they believe, wouldn't help them as much as Shane Battier would. So if it's even just a trade like that where you find yourself, considering their roster, I'm trying to figure out what would be the optimal position that they could add who was a veteran.
I feel like it's shooting guards, though, or small forward.
Because do you consider Amen a four?
Or yeah, I kind of view him as all like around. I kind of view him as like a four, and then obviously that changes the math with the double big lineup.
Like, because you're using a lottery pick, so you want a player who will contribute. Does that mean you need a player who starts? Because it is a lottery pick, although your lottery pick likely would not start. So you have a shooting guard that you're backing right now in Jalen. And a shooting guard or wing in Cam Whitmore, who you're not playing, who everyone just assumes won't be on the roster this year. So if you could find a solid piece there, a 2-3 type, I think that's where I would lean into. Unless you can trade the 10 for a backup center. If you're not bringing back Steven Adams because he may be too expensive, I just don't know how people would like trading a lottery pick for a backup player. So if I just don't know if there is room for a starter on this roster if you're not trading for a star. Like, can you trade for a starting piece that isn't the star as this roster is presently constituted? That's where I'm bumping up against.
I think it's Fred's the math problem here, right?
Like, I would agree.
Like, if we talked about the Cavs with John earlier this morning. Like, if Darius Garland were to be available.
Sure.
Could you go after Darius Garland using the 10th pick, and that becomes your starting point guard, and you feel confident with him moving forward? Or if there's a thing where it's Garland and Fred and Jalen's somewhere else, like, that could be a possibility. I think we have to keep an eye on Boston now and see, like, what's happening. If they're really going to cut salary.
Would you trade for Drew Holiday? That's what you're talking
about? Yeah, Drew Holiday, Derek White. I mean, I think Jalen Brown. I mean, remember when John reported, like, well, I was like 2 years ago now, that the Rockets were going to go after Jalen Brown. Like, if that's still something Ime wants to really do, like, if Boston's going to tear it down, that to me is like Tatum getting hurt, I think, puts Jalen Brown kind of front and center for me. If it's not going to be Giannis, like, that's probably like number two on my list. Cause I don't want John Morant. I mean, the wildest thing I think the Rockets could do would be like take a flyer on like Zion. Like if New Orleans wants to bail, like, could you trade Jalen Green in the 10th pick for Zion?
I believe Zion's contract is set up that at a certain point every offseason you can cut him and it won't.
Yes.
It doesn't cost. You can just waive him and you're done for.
Yeah.
Now, once it passed that date, his contract becomes guaranteed per year. But that Zion may be a guy someone who wants to get off salary might do, where they trade a couple pieces to the Pelicans that they deem valuable, and then they go, you know what, Zion? We're going to waive you because we got to avoid a tax, or we're just trying to save because we're not good. He's a candidate. He could possibly be a candidate for that, but for the Rockets?
Probably not.
Probably not, yeah.
But, yeah, so I think the 10th pick is someone that is probably a starter that replaces either Fred VanVleet or Dylan Brooks in the starting lineup. Or if you want to go the double big route, you go back to Cleveland here, even though it's not working there. If you want to take one of their bigs and pair him with Şengün, you could try that. Like they have options of what they want to do. Personally, I still feel like it's just inevitable that Kevin Durant's coming to Houston. And that's what the 10th pick is going to be.
Yeah. I was thinking, like, Daniel Gafford's a free agent after this upcoming season. Throwing the 10th pick Dallas's way for a guy who has been somewhat open about certainly wants a new deal, but he does have a year left on his deal. Only $14 million, so right in that Steven Adams range. If you can't bring back Steven Adams, which may be a priority, maybe you want to get younger there, and Daniel Gafford could be someone you take a look at with that 10th pick. Throw it the Mavericks' way because they already have the double bigs, and then they're adding another front court player in Cooper Flagg. So Daniel Gafford might be someone to take a look at if you're looking for the double big thing. But
it's just hard to get a read on. Like what you were saying earlier about them, like the report from Kelly Eco that the Rockets are not interested in Devin Booker. Like that to me has to all be about defensive effort and the issues that were happening with Mike Budenholzer on the sideline. And like that's why Ime must deem him as not a fit. Like it does seem like that's this team more than most effort and defense like will really matter. And that kind of limits your pool. Like it almost sounds like Nico Harrison talking in a way. Like the way he talked about Luka sounds like the way the Rockets are reportedly talking about Devin Booker. It's like there's just something missing with his game that doesn't fit Rockets basketball. Because like to Jalen Green's credit, he was a very, very good defender this year. He's one of the best pick and roll defenders in the NBA. His offense just stunk.
And Art asked the question, why does everyone assume Cam Whitmore is out because he doesn't smile? It's less about smiling and more about the Rockets seem to need you to get in line. And that's a player who may not want to be here as well, Art. It may not just be a Rockets decision. Now they have control, so they can decide what they want. But we're going into year three for him. And if he doesn't see a pathway on the court, I don't think he envisioned when he was at one point considered a top 10 pick being a bit part of a team. So while we always talk about it from the team perspective, there could be a player who has wants and goals, and he looks at this roster and goes, I'm not playing here. I'd like to go someplace else and play. That could be part of the equation. And less about a bad attitude and more about what he wants to be as a player. If you're 3D, potentially 3 years deep into your career, and you're still not getting consistent minutes, you will definitely look to see where you can find it. And right now, Cam's only on coming out of year two. He may not want to deal with another year of getting spot minutes with the Rockets, despite how successful the team may be. So,
and he's like the perfect player to like go to like the Hornets or the Wizards. They're like they're going to view him as all upside. And if you can get a good veteran role player, like Cam Whitmore is perfect for that, for those teams.
He's a player that needs time to play. And right now, he's not getting it here. And that might just be the most frustrating thing for him. Let me play. I want to play. I understand the sentiment. All right, we're done. Gallant is up next. And where are they again, Joe?
Senate Avenue Brewing. They'll be there from 12 to 8. And Pat Onstead and Bill Brown will be there tonight from 6 to 8.
So full day out there. You should join them if you can. We'll be back tomorrow. The regular lineup, as far as me and Sean are concerned, Joe will get to sleep in. Congratulations to
Thank
Joe.
You.
Thanks, Joe, for filling in the last couple of days. Joe, since we're done for the day, what does that mean?
We did it!
He won't be doing it for a while, unfortunately.
That's tough.
Yeah, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.